Access number 29045, Mr. Keith Glover, Reel 5. Now, what do you remember of your time at Kitech? I understand it's quite a basic routine you've got set up here, and maybe it's not a lot happened, but what do you remember of that period?
Well, there are a number of stories not to do with my trade. I've mentioned the fact that I'm a bandsman and that we used to entertain the officers on their dining in night. There was one in particular I remember because the officers were entertaining Americans. And as was normal, when the mess president proposed a toast to Her Majesty, we clipped in with the national anthem. And then the Americans responded by proposing a toast to the President of the United States. And we tapped into the American national anthem, which took the Yanks by complete surprise. They were absolutely gobsmacked and delighted, which meant we got a double ration of drinks that night, because obviously the Yanks sent us beers out. That sticks in my memory.
Did you do many? I mean, how many sort of functions did you do with the band there? We haven't talked about the band in Kitech. You obviously joined the band, the station band.
Oh, yes. On every camp I was serving at, I joined the station band. In those days, most, if not all, stations had a band, sometimes only about half a dozen musicians, but there was always someone to blow a tune when it was needed. Basically, once a month we'd entertain the officers. I can't remember any other functions apart from the weekly parade of a Saturday morning, which we led. And as was true with all the other stations, the bandsmen were the groupies, blue-eyed boys. He loved us and we got away with murder, basically.
Cat. Yeah.
If you were a bandsman, that you got forgiven a lot of ills. Or perhaps they looked the other way and didn't see the ill anyway. We entertained ourselves with the band. Unlike other stations, it didn't get me excused duties. But then again, we had plenty of time off because of the shift system. So it didn't bother me one jot that. What it did do was get me excused guard duties again. And in fact, in the whole of my service career, I did not stand one guard duty at all, which was nice. And then soccer took up a lot of my time.
Now, tell us about that. What sort of football activities were going on?
Well, I played for the station side, RAF Kitech, and we were good. That sounds very arrogant, but it happens to be a statement of truth. One of our team was, in fact, an apprentice footballer for Chelsea, and had got called up, and we'd got players of that strength. We duffed everyone up in sight. And I've got a medal at home to this day to prove it. But it also led to me getting smashed up. One nasty creep took me out of the game.
What position were you playing?
I mostly at left half, but I occasionally filled in at centre half.
So what did he do?
Well, I tackled him with my left leg, and then I can't believe it was an accident, I really can't. He smashed down on the knee and tried to bend the knee the way it shouldn't be bent. And to this day, I suffer with it. It got me early retirement in the end, it has been operated on. That was sad. What it didn't do was get me a medical pension, but then again, I never did apply for one. I suspect strongly now, being old and cynical, that had I stirred the mud, I perhaps would have done. It was a shame. It meant, in fact, I didn't complete the season, and although I've just said I've got a medal, I didn't play in the final, but because I'd been in the team for so long, there's always an extra couple of gongs given.
What was the competition you were playing? Was it cup? What area?
It was the Hong Kong New Territories area. There's lots of little stations, not all RAF. RAF Sikong was a fighter station, but there were lots of little army units spattered about, and they obviously all had a football team. Always, except for that one incident, they were fine occasions.
Were they mixed ranked here? I mean, would you have officers playing?
They would be mixed ranked, but we didn't have officers playing.
They weren't good enough?
Absolutely. Had there been one good enough and wanting to play, then obviously he would have been in the team.
NCOs, any of them playing?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Once you get out of basic training and then trade training, corporals are no different to the other junior ranks. They carry a little more command. They have the ability to charge people if they feel the need, but mostly they're just one of the boys. And the senior NCOs were all noble beasties and still are. I've mixed with a lot of them to this day from RAF Cottesmore, and they were wonderful people.
Now, any other stories of your time there?
Let's have a little think.
You were there about 18 months, right?
Yes, I was. I enjoyed life so much on and around the camp that I never did bother to take any leave, believe it or not. I didn't feel the need for it. Two of the guys used to take a week off and go across to Macau, a Portuguese settlement. But I didn't feel the need for that sort of rest. I got all I wanted with the shift system we worked. So that was fine. Going round the island of Hong Kong is Victoria. I used to pop across there and wander around that part. But Kowloon, which is the city side on the mainland side.
Kai Tak's on the New Territories, isn't it?
Yes, it's Kowloon's airport. Well, Victoria's too. It's Hong Kong airport. But it is on the mainland side. And just to wander down Nathan Road held everything. On payday, I used to go to a restaurant called Tashenko's. Don't ask me to spell it now. That's in Kowloon. And treat myself to half a cold lobster. And we're talking of a lobster something in excess of a foot long. Which was superb, but I couldn't afford it more than once a fortnight. Other stories? The customs men would capture smuggled tobacco, and this used to be distributed. I swear blind, the officers got all the English cigarettes, but there was always a free issue of American Camel and Lucky Strike and cigarettes like that to the ordinary irks. You know, we get 200 fags for nout. But then again, it was a difficult smoking 200 Lucky Strikes, I thought. It went quickly. Towards the end, I did toy actually with the idea of being demobbed there and joining the Hong Kong police force, because the lowest rank that a European could hold in that was they called them a sub-inspector, which is a rank below inspector. We don't have them in this country. All the ordinary policemen were Chinese, up to the rank of sergeant. And I don't know what put me off that idea. But in the end, I decided not to and came back to Blighty.
Now, what was the return? I mean, were you just posted back? I mean, how did it all end?
No, I was time served. And what the RAF did was to fly you home so that you were back in Britain for your demob date, which in my case, I was demobbed at RAF Innsworth.
Now, what was the date of your demob?
It was something like the 7th of April, but I couldn't be precise. It was early April 19.
So sort of 16 months.
Yeah.
Now, anything about the flight back, or was that just routine?
No, was it Ella's like? Again, it was Airworks, and we get on this Hermes, and we get as far as Bangkok, where the flight in front of us had lost an engine. So they pinched our aircraft to take them further in their journey, and we had to wait in Bangkok for a replacement aircraft or a replacement engine, one or the other. And it was fearfully hot. It was a pig. And we were on the airport. So in the end, I went to the senior officer and said, look, sir, I said, there's a woman there, because there were servicemen's wives on the homeward flight with young children, and she's dying. The heat was... and with that, he got off his backside and went and made motions and movements and got us all booked into a hotel. I don't think he would have done that unless I'd have said something to him. Now, that was fine, lovely hotel, good food, but we hadn't got a brass farthing between us. We managed to scrape it up enough for one bottle of beer, and about six of us sat round the table and took it in turns to sip. And no one had gulpers, they were all very, very good. They just sipped and passed the bottle on, and that was it. It was also the time of the King of Siam's death, and there was a huge funeral in Bangkok. Some of the guys went out to watch it. I couldn't, it was too hot, too sticky. I just stayed in the hotel. And in the fullness time, we got an aircraft, we got up back on board, and off we went. And the flight after that was uneventful. I really can't remember now where we put down. I suspect strongly it was the same airport that we used to leave, but I can't remember. I cannot remember. And from there, what happened?
What was the demob procedure? I mean, how did it actually work?
We got to Innsworth, and then all our KDs were handed in. They took the lot back. But our blues we kept because we were on reserve. I think it was Class H. And that basically was it. Once the kit was handed in, we were no good to the RAF. They were no good to us. So we bade them goodbye, got a travel warrant, and off we went. Big lorry down to the station at Gloucester, homeward bound.
Now, what were you going to do? I mean, had you thought of taking a regular career in the RAF, you know, staying in the RAF, or was that not an option?
Had I been accepted for aircrew, that very definitely was an option. I would have signed for the maximum. And I didn't consider staying in the trade I'd been allocated to. It had no attractions for me at all. See, I was 21 by now. I'd celebrated my 21st at RAF Kaitak and finished up in the British Military Hospital. Having said, I'm sure on this interview at one stage I didn't drink a lot. I did then.
What happened?
I got absolutely plastered. And the guys in the billet panicked. They thought I was dying. I probably was. So they sent for the station medics, and they appeared. They panicked, loaded me into an ambulance and took me down into Kowloon to the British Military Hospital. And when I woke up the next day, there was an army doctor who gave me very polite tongue lashing and said words to the effect, go home and behave yourself, which I did.
So now, what were you going to do when you came back? I mean, were you going to go back to your old job? Or
yes,
what?
That in those days, if you were called up for national service, the firm that employed you, were it was demanded of them that your post was kept open for you on return. And although I'd had my deferment cancelled, the pet food still held good, and I went back there for another, couple of years before I decided that really that wasn't what I wanted either. And so I went to college and became a teacher.
That was your career, was it?
It was then, yes, from 1960 until they retired me on health grounds in 1992. I taught for 32 years.
So what did you teach? What subject did you do?
I started off maths and physical education. But in those days you were expected to teach everything. And I did in fact teach a lot of English. I've even taught metalwork in my time there. But initially my two main subjects were maths and PE. In the fullness of time I became the head of the PE department. And then when I'd reached the age where really I should be looking for something else, the boss man, the head, moved me sideways into the science department. And in the fullness of time, I became head of the science. That's how I finished up in 1992 as head of the science department.
So you'd been teaching from, 58 to 92?
No, 60 to 92. 96. I was at St Paul's College in Cheltenham for 2 years to train.
Of course. Now, the other thing we want to cover is because you are, that's how we've met you, I think you're the secretary or the chairman.
I'm the secretary of the local branch of the Royal Air Forces Association.
Now, tell us about, if you could go through your involvement with the RAFA and why it's so important and what you think of it,
what
it does.
Well, initially, I became a member of the branch to use the club. I'd come down here for...
That's in back in Melton Mowbray.
Yeah. Recently, the landlord of the pub I was using retired, and I didn't like the new guy that took over. There was already one or two of my friends, ex-RAF, that were members here of the club, and said, well, why don't you come down here, Keith? Which I did.
And that was when, roughly?
That was roughly 25 years ago. About that.
So 1981-ish?
Yes.
Now, what did you find, what did it offer you as an ordinary member, the RAFA?
Well, we're not talking RAFA yet, we're just talking the pub side of it. And I hadn't been a member long before they needed a secretary and talked me into doing it. And then that's when I became involved with the RAFA, with RAFA. Up until that time, it was just a beer hole.
So you became secretary when, do you think?
When?
Yeah, when about, 82?
It was something like that. I could, if I went to the office, I'd dig the records out, I could tell you fortnightly, but within 1 or 2 years. Yeah, certainly in excess of 20 years.
Now, what's the role of secretary? What do you do and what does a club do?
Well, a lot of people, including my ex-chairman, who is now the president of our branch, couldn't get their heads round it for the start. They thought that the club and the branch were one and the same thing. Well, they're not and never have been and never will be. You can have a branch without a club. What you can't have is a club without a branch. And so after I'd researched all the material that's available about the RAFA organisation, there were one or two changes I had to make, which initially offended some of the founder members, ex-World War II veterans that had formed the branch initially. But when I pointed out to them in the Bible they're off a Bible, that they were breaking the rules by doing what they were doing. They accepted it. The Royal Air Forces Association has two main functions. One is to raise money to benefit serving and ex-RAF people and their dependents. The second part is to provide comradeship. Now, this happens in branches without clubs. They meet for social occasions apart from raising money for Wings and the Benevolent Fund. It makes life much easier if you've got your own club to fulfil the comradeship bit of it. And which is the most important? Well, obviously, the branch side, the RAFA side. It's important that we do raise money for people that are in need, and it's also important that we keep alive the memories of certainly the Second World War and any other war that's followed it. When I was teaching, I used to run some assemblies, and Wings Week, the boss always let me devote that to Wings. So for a whole week I'd have kids with tins going around the classrooms getting money for their little Wings stickers, and I'd go in front of them and tell them little stories, either real or false, depending on the occasion. I don't know, I bet if you ask kids today who was Hitler, they wouldn't know. And I'm terrified to think that I bet if you ask them to sing the national anthem, they couldn't. I'm fairly convinced. This has happened since I've been retired at the school I taught at, for sure, because there were some old guys there, apart from myself, and we made sure that the kids did know those things. But I'm fairly convinced that schools these days are not that keen. I read only recently where British children are being taught all sorts of other religions, and I'm not against that, Sikhism, Hinduism, etc., etc., but not getting any Christianity taught to them in case it affects and offends what I will call the ethnic minority. I can't live with that. All religions have their place in life, to the exclusion of none, and to exclude Christianity in this country is, in my view, infradig. So
how do you set about? You've got the comradeship that's based around the club, which is a bar.
Oh God, right. Yeah.
So what activities have you been undertaking in the last 20-odd years? I mean, it's a long time you've been doing
this. Oh, yeah. Well, I used to organise trips to the theatre. We'd organise trips to museums, predominantly aircraft museums, of course. We'd organise trips to RAF stations. We'd visit and entertain other branches in the area. Life was pretty full. Because in those days I was doing a full-time job as well.
Now, is there a problem with an ageing membership? Because, you know, the British Legion's having a real problem with this. I wonder whether
The RAFA is in the same boat. I am told, and I believe it, that the actual serving membership of the Royal Air Force now is so small that you could get them all in the old Wembley Stadium. And that's not funny. So many of the jobs that used to be Air Force jobs are now hired out to civilians, the messes. If you want a runway, you've got to get the outside contractors in. Servicing aircraft is a lot different now, the little I know about it. When we'd got tornadoes at Cottesmore, I used to talk to the techies. And let's suppose a radio went duff. There was no one on station to mend it. The whole thing was taken out, a new one put in, and the old one sent back to the manufacturers. Now, that's fine while you're stationed in Leicestershire stroke Lincolnshire, but a bit awkward if you're in Saudi Arabia or Iran or Iraq or somewhere. There's an old guy still alive who was an airframe fitter in the Middle East, and he's got a photograph of a fighter, I've forgotten exactly which one it was, where an enemy cannon shell had actually pierced the leading edge of the port wing. Now, all these guys did was pinch a wing off another aircraft that was not serviceable and would never ever fly again. And they did this. They pirated parts from scrap aircraft and kept other aircraft in the air. I'm not so sure that that's possible now.
So how are you going to overcome this ageing membership problem?
In my view, we're not. We're a dying organisation, and I've said this in public many a time, and there are others that think like me. We can't get replacements. There aren't any replacements in the quantities that are needed to keep RAFA going in its present form. My own view is that eventually the British Legion and RAFA are going to amalgamate and become a United Services organisation. That's probably the only way forward, to keep it an ex-service organisation. I do know now that the British Legion have changed their rules, so anyone who joins a club then becomes a full member of the British Legion, and I think that's a step backwards. It's important that all the members we have who are not ex-RAF know full well what it's all about, and they do put their hands in their pockets and they do help to raise money for welfare. Whereas most of the British Legion members that are not ex-service just use the place for cheap beer. Now, I can't fault them for that. But what I can object to is them getting the same privileges as an ex-serving member of the forces. If they're going to get in on the welfare side, then that really, really is wrong.
Now, the last thing, I think the answer's fairly obvious, but, I mean, did you enjoy your service in the RAF, looking back on it? Because you were a national service lad, but then you had tried to join up. Did you enjoy it?
I certainly did. I look back often with very, very fond memories. I can't remember any bad times. I'm sure there were some, but I can't remember them. I can only remember the good things. And again, being a dinosaur, I think it was a sad day when national service was stopped. For a lot of people, they were taken away from mum's apron strings as a boy, and she got back a man. Now, my own lad is 34. He still lives at home, bless him. I love him dearly. And I suppose he's more streetwise than I am these days with all the thing that's happening out there. But really, he's not seen much of life apart from Melton Mowbray and One Ankle Hill.
And you've got a lot more,
yes, I have a wealth of experience and memories, etc., etc.
Thank you very much.